Could not be more pleased to welcome on the show author, writer, Greg Easterbrook. He's written 8 books, including Progress Paradox, Sonic Boom, among the more recent ones. Also, columnist for ESPN.com, where he writes the Tuesday morning quarterback TMQ. And I have been a loyal reader dating back to his days on NFL.com, which is like 2003 or 2004. And I've never have missed an edition of Tuesday Morning Quarterback. Greg Easterbrook's new book is The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America. And again, more than pleased to bring him into the show now. Greg, good morning to you.
Good morning, and if you're a loyal TMQ reader, then you are a man of good taste.
I absolutely want to talk about the book, but if we can talk briefly about Tuesday Morning Quarterback, there's a new one out today, of course, at ESPN.com. It's unlike anything out there, and it has been now for more than a decade. It started at NFL.com, now is at ESPN.com. Where did the genesis come from? Because you hit on everything. We mentioned from sci-fi to TV to politics, from college to pro to high school football. How did that all come together?
Well, yes, if your listeners aren't familiar with Tuesday Morning Quarterback, it's mostly about football, but it's a hodgepodge. I have an item in today's on solar research. I have an item on the budget shutdown here in Washington and so on. I'll tell you how it started. Years ago, on Sundays I wanted to watch NFL games on TV, and my wife would want to take our kids to picturesque state parks or out to cultural activities. Could you imagine these misplaced priorities? So I had to come up with a professional reason why I needed to watch football games, and the reason I came up with was to write the Tuesday Morning Quarterback column. But when I told my wife that I now had to watch football on television, it's the only time in our entire marriage he was speechless.
And it's fantastic, and kind of it goes along with that. I love how you close the final TMQ column of every year, which happens somewhere around February after the Super Bowl. And that is, you admonish your readers to go out, experience nature, spend time with family, travel, get outdoors, experience life to its fullest, so you don't feel bad about spending Sundays indoors once the next football season hits.
Yes, and I try to follow my own advice in that regard.
Greg Easterbrook with us. The King of Sports is the new book, Football's Impact on America. And if you are a loyal TMQ reader, some of the themes through the book will not be a surprise to you. But football's impact on America, and I think, you know, there's so much discussion these days, Greg, about the safety of the game. And you write a lot about it in the columns and in this book, about how to make sure that football continues to be popular, how football continues to be played by the youth, as you say over and over again. There's no law that says football must remain popular. Steps must be taken to ensure that continues down the road.
Sure. I love football, and I attend way too many football games in addition to watching way too many. But you can really like something and also be aware that it has deep-seated problems that need to be reformed, and football certainly in that category. I think there's an outside chance that football would eventually be abolished from a legislative standpoint if neurological harm studies keep getting as bad as they are. And I think there's a huge chance it would go into decline, especially if public high school districts stop playing football because of the legal liability for brain trauma damage.
Is the concussion issue the biggest problem, the biggest potential scandal, the biggest threat to the future of the NFL? Is it this concussion head injury issue that it's dealing with these days?
To the NFL, I don't think so. The NFL just reached a settlement deal with the former players that were suing it over neurological harm. The judge has not yet approved that settlement, but is expected to. So from the NFL standpoint, they're fine, and the NFL has so much money, they can buy their way out of any problem. The real issue of concussions that concerns me, and I spend a lot of time on this in the book, The King of Sports, is not that NFL players, nobody wants them to get hurt, but there's only 2,000 of them. They're all highly paid adults. The real issue is youth players, where there are 3 million, high school players, where there are 1.1 million. Nearly all the neurological damage done by football occurs to kids who legally are children, mm-hmm. and only a tiny fraction of whom will ever realize even a college recruiting opportunity, let alone will ever make the NFL. So there are good arguments for playing high school football. It can be a good way to teach self-discipline and teamwork and so on. There are many positives to the sport. But the negative of neurological harm done to children, I think is looking more serious all the time, and it especially looks serious at the youth level. I say in the book, and I give the documentation on this, that tackle football simply shouldn't be played before middle school. And any parents who are listening, wondering if they should let their boys or even their girls play tackle football, the answer is no. Do not allow it until middle school. The neurological and studies on this are pretty close to airtight, and I can tell you that I have two boys. I did not allow either of them to play tackle football until they were in middle school, and it didn't stop one from going on to being a football starter in the NCAA.
Greg Easterbrook with us. The book is The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America, linked up on our Twitter feed, Facebook page this morning. You can find it at fine bookstores everywhere, and Amazon and Barnes & Noble as well. I know you go through some of the way the NFL sets the tone for both the college and the high school and youth levels, too, in terms of what they allow, what they don't allow. Why aren't the best possible helmets mandated by the NFL if they're trying to really prevent these brain issues, the head injuries, but they don't mandate the use of helmets that are proven in tests to be safer than others?
Yeah, that's a source of great frustration, both to me and to the way the NFL presents itself to the public. No helmet can prevent concussions. There would always be concussion risk no matter what. But studies show that some of the more modern designs reduce your concussion risk. At least you're reducing the risk. The NFL will not mandate modern helmets. Their stated reasoning, which I don't buy, but their stated reasoning is that if a player chooses his own helmet and then sustains a concussion, he is to blame. If the league mandates a helmet and the player sustains a concussion, the league then becomes liable. I don't think that is correct thinking legally, as long as the risk is disclosed. That's what the NFL thinks. So the result of this is that on the heads of NFL players are still the Rydell VSR4 helmet, which has been shown in Virginia Tech's research to be an inferior design. Kids see NFL players wearing an inferior design, and they imitate it.
Greg Easterbrook, again, the book is The King of Sports, out now. We'll talk a little bit about the collegiate ranks. Something I do like about TMQ, Tuesday Winning Quarterback, is the focus and attention that you spend not just with the D1, but also the D2 and the D3, especially D3. I went to a D3 school, so I like the spotlight on the Wisconsin Whitewaters and the Mountain Unions of the world at times. But there's a big debate, and it's been going on forever, about whether or not college athletes should be paid. And I really like your take on the matter, and I've mentioned it on the show a couple of times, but if you would explain how you come at this topic about whether or not college athletes, specifically, I guess it's usually the football, the basketball that's talked about, if they should be paid.
Well, let me tell you my opinion on that, but first I'll say, yeah, D3 football is surprisingly good, high quality. If there's any small schools in your listeners nearby where they live that have a D3 program, go take in some game. It's mm-hmm. $5 to get in. It's easy to park. The football is fun. It's football played at a human scale, and I think very enjoyable. Now, to the question of whether the big deal guys at the football factories of Division I should be paid, I think no, and I'll tell you why. I think the real scandal is that they're not getting diplomas. Only 55% of D1 football players graduate. That's much lower than the figure for students as a whole at public universities. A college diploma, studies show, adds roughly $1 million to your lifetime earnings potential. That means if you just want to talk about economic value, the diploma is more valuable to college football players than any amount that they could be paid under any schemes. But the proposals for pay are in the nature of $15,000 to $25,000 a year. The diploma is just worth more than that. Beyond the fact that we want colleges to educate people, that's what colleges are for, just from the standpoint of economic value, the diploma is what really matters. And I want big college football substantially reformed so that most of the players would graduate. And I show in the book, since I knew that King of Sports would be largely critical of the football establishment, I also wanted to provide a positive example. So I've got a couple chapters on Virginia Tech football. Mm-hmm. I spent the 2011 season with the Virginia Tech team. Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech, he has 20 consecutive winning seasons, and he also graduates 77% of his players. If every big deal football program graduated 77% of its players, we wouldn't be having this conversation because everything would be fine. So I show by describing how Frank Beamer does it that you can have a big deal program that graduates people, and I really hope that all of college football is reformed along those lines.
I want to get back to Frank Beamer in a moment, but part of your solutions, part of your recommendations for the collegiate ranks includes, in whatever mathematical formula that they're going to use for these BCS rankings, to include somewhere in there graduation rates for these schools.
Sure.
Make that a part of how they're ranked.
Exactly. Human beings respond to incentives. If you're a college coach or a college athletic director, you have only one incentive. Your incentive is victory. If you add an incentive that has to do with education, people will respond to that. You know how the colleges struggle over the second and third decimal place of their ranking. If graduation rates were a factor in their rankings, coaches suddenly would care about whether their players were in class.
And speaking of coaches, one other collegiate recommendation you have that I think is a good idea, too, is any sort of punishments, any sort of, not fines, I guess, at the collegiate level, but the head coaches who commit the violation should have those punishments follow them, not stick with the school.
Exactly. Lane Kiffin, who was just fired the other day, he left the University of Tennessee because he knew it was about to be hit with NCAA sanctions. He whistled a merry tune and went to Los Angeles and took a new job. The sanctions should have followed Lane Kiffin personally. And whenever a program is sanctioned, the coaches who were present when the violations occurred should receive the same sanctions no matter where they are in the NCAA universe.
Greg Easterbrook with us, the king of sports football's impact on America. You mentioned your time spent with Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech, who graduates his players and generally has a top 25 ranking at the end of the year. And the positive coaching that he instills in his players, and I think you were the one maybe a year or two ago that pointed out watching Brian Kelly on the sidelines for Notre Dame. Now, I would imagine Notre Dame's graduation rate is actually pretty darn good, but watching Brian Kelly on the sidelines berate his players over and over again, week after week, it's a little tough to watch when you consider, again, these are college students, not professionals.
Yeah, Notre Dame does have a good graduation rate. That's one of the programs I admire. But I don't admire coaches who scream in public. Nick Saban is a screamer, too. He's constantly screaming at his players on the sideline. Nick Saban makes mistakes. We all make mistakes. If it's good to be screamed at in public, somebody should grab Nick Saban and scream at him. This is why I'm an advocate of positive coaching, where you don't scream. My line has always been that coaches who shout are wasting everyone's time, including their own. But in positive coaching goes beyond that. You never demean your players. You never insult them. You only challenge them to get better.
Greg Easterbrook with us here. Just another minute or two with him. The King of Sports is the book, Football's Impact on America. You mentioned that, you know, there are times in the book when you are critical of the sport, critical of the NFL, and yet the goal is to secure its future. And I don't want people to think this is a book that is only about bashing the sport or bashing the NFL. If anyone has read Tuesday Morning Quarterback or reads the book, they know that you love football, not just for the game itself, but what it does, what it can do for kids, you know, with your own son moving through the ranks and starting at a D3 school, and also what it can do for communities as well. High school football night across America is a beautiful thing.
Oh, yeah, I love the ritual of attending high school football games. I often go to high school games where I don't even know anybody on the field playing, just to be part of the community. The games are often surprisingly good. Sometimes high school games are terrible, too. But it's, we don't have that many communal rituals anymore in America. Football is the number one in terms of attendance. High school football attendance now is neck and neck with worship service attendance for things that Americans physically do in person. So I wouldn't want to lose that. I think football is good for promoting colleges. I think one reason why the United States has the highest college attendance rate in the world is that football makes colleges exciting. That doesn't mean that colleges have it in perspective. Their perspective needs to change on many things, but I wouldn't want football to disappear from campuses. It's part of what makes the college a fun place to be. And I sure wouldn't want the NFL to go out of business. I just want it to stop getting public subsidies and setting bad examples on painkiller abuse and other things.
The King of Sports is the book, Football's Impact on America. The author is Greg Easterbrook. I can't recommend the book enough. Again, available all over the place, Twitter feed, Facebook page. You'll find the link there. And also, of course, got to head to ESPN.com later today for this week's installment of Tuesday Morning Quarterback, which I love, 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 love. Greg Easterbrook, thank you so much for the time this morning. Appreciate your writing, your work, and the new book, and the love of football, too. Thanks so much.
Great, thank you.